Patrick Henningsen and TNT.
Good morning, good evening, wherever you are in the world. This is Basil Valentine sitting in for Patrick Henningsen. And what a great program we've got for you tonight. A particularly interesting first guest, if I may say so. Andrew Eborn is going to be talking about something that I didn't think was really an issue at all until he sent me an email with details of exactly how all this unpacks. And that is the use of artificial intelligence to influence elections, perhaps on both sides of the Atlantic. Yes, images can be created which look authentic, but are in fact completely fictitious. And these, of course, can present a very different picture of a candidate to the real one. Likewise, videos can be doctored to give entirely different impressions from what actually happened. It is a sad fact that in our world at the moment, we increasingly struggle to tell the difference between what's real and what is being produced for propaganda or other nefarious purposes. So I'm very much looking forward to talking to Andrew Eborn about that in the first hour. In the second hour, I'll be joined by Blake Lovewell, our cryptocurrency expert, to have a look at the latest that's happening with Bitcoin. Whenever I think about buying in, I can't help thinking the price is about to drop, only for it to go up. And so then you think, well, I can't buy now. And then the price does drop, and so on and so forth. So I don't know if you've got any Bitcoin. I don't have a single one. But whenever I am reminded of it, I think about that poor chap in South Wales, I believe, who threw away his old computer with what would now be several hundred millions of pounds worth of Bitcoin on a hard drive. I didn't realize you have to store it on your own mechanism, on your own machine. Very old-fashioned, really. There's no cloud storage for Bitcoin, or maybe there is. Perhaps Blake can tell us. But he threw away a computer with hundreds of millions of pounds worth of cryptocurrency on the hard drive. And you can look it up. He's since been in negotiation with local council to conduct a fingertip search of the appropriate rubbish tips to go through all these thousands of old computer hard drives in a bid to find the one with the cryptocurrency on it. I mean, it must be the most extraordinary form of prolonged torture every day to wake up and think that you threw away a huge fortune in a moment of madness or carelessness or whatever. He must have replayed that time over and over and over again in his mind, wondering why he did such a thing. Other people have built up fortunes, of course, relatively recently in some cases. The only cryptocurrency I ever bought into, to the sum of £50 sterling, was supposedly backed by gold. And unfortunately, it turned out to be absolutely worthless. So we'll get the latest on crypto and also the possibility of a wider regional war in the Middle East with investigative journalist and TNT contributor Blake Lovewell. And then in the final section of the second hour, I'll be talking about the abysmal sentencing of whistleblower David McBride. And for that discussion, I'll be joined from Sydney, Australia, by Tony Wakeham, a veteran campaigner on behalf of Julian Assange and indeed of David as well. In the meantime, let's have a look at some of the other headlines. And unusually, the former Soviet Republic of Georgia is very much in the news, having passed a law which it's claimed is Kremlin-inspired and which requires organizations representing other countries to register as foreign agents. On the face of it, not necessarily a bad idea. I think we would all benefit from knowing which organizations in our own countries are in fact working on behalf of foreign governments. But it seems this is Kremlin inspired and it's produced mass protests. Are these protests genuine or are these protests similarly designed to overthrow an otherwise democratically elected and popular government? US Assistant Secretary of State Jim O'Brien has spoken of his fears that the passing of by Georgia's parliament of the Foreign Agents Bill today could be yet another turning point in the former Soviet state's troubled history. In comments that appear to signal a conviction in Washington that the Georgian government is once again aligning with Russia, oh, well, we can't have that, can we? O'Brien suggested US funding could soon be pooled. Billions of dollars have been spent by the US on rebuilding Georgia. That's your money, taxpayers, after the fall of the Soviet Union. And hundreds of millions of more are planned for the country's economy and military, apparently. All that is under review if we are now regarded as an adversary and not a partner, O'Brien told reporters at a press conference. The US official was speaking about the controversial bill, which was backed by 84 MPs to 30 in defiance of demonstrations that brought hundreds of thousands of people onto the streets of the capital, Tbilisi. Meanwhile, hundreds of thousands of people are streaming out of Rafah in the southern tip of Gaza for more than 200 days. Writes a correspondent in Gaza City, life has been an unimaginable struggle and most Palestinians are barely able to make it. The most basic necessities of life are nearly impossible to come by. And since Israel ordered evacuation of parts of Rafah, an already unlivable situation has become dangerously worse. This is a Palestinian, Eman Mohammed, a maths teacher from Gaza City, writing in today's Guardian. My family is now sheltering in Deir al-Balah in central Gaza. We'd been living with two other families, 23 people, in an overcrowded house. But then more of our relatives from Rafah were displaced, and the number has now increased to 45 people. Imagine living in a house with so many people, each trying to make a small ration stretch beyond its limits in an attempt to get some calories for the day. Water, once taken for granted, is a precious commodity. We use seawater to bathe, and many get sick from drinking polluted water. The living conditions here are abysmal for the tens of thousands of arrivals from Rafah who seek shelter and refuge. The crowding is unbearable. Outside on the streets are thousands of tents filled with entire families. Some people sleep out in the open because there is nothing available to use as a tent, or if they have a tent, there is nowhere to put it because of the overcrowding. Wastewater flows into the streets and between the tents because there is nowhere else for it to go. The lack of sanitation causes disease and the water is polluted. Mosquitoes and insects feed on the living, causing skin problems and reaction and spreading more infections. We are fighting an invisible war against illness, infections, and starvation. Even with these conditions, we await the arrival of still more people from Rafah, hoping that they can get the transportation to evacuate. But many families remain trapped. The cost to flee is so high as transportation is limited and most of the sick, starving and injured can't travel at all. They just sit in their homes or tents and await their fate, not knowing if it will be an Israeli bomb or bullet. We're going to take a short break now, and when we come back, I hope to be joined by Andrew Eborn for a look at how AI is influencing elections. We'll be right back after this short break.
TNT's Jason Olborn.
The January 6th committee, they brought in a producer, they produced it, but they showed a lot of my internal cameras, my closed circuit TV security cameras from inside the Capitol. None of those cameras have audio. They're video only, yet the committee imported sounds to make it sound more dramatic. Imagine if a police chief anywhere in the world took body-worn camera, changed the audio to make it sound more damning on a suspect, and release that to the public. How do you think that would go?
That's an extraordinary statement, Steve. That is unbelievable. So a manipulation of supposed evidence in order to present or preserve a narrative, it's something that we've come to expect, sadly, but here we are in real time realizing that how far this manipulation goes.
Weekends with Jason Olborn on today's News Talk, TNT.
In a democracy, the majority vote rules. But in most democracies, you can only vote for change every 3 or 4 years. To understand what people want, governments and political parties use focus groups. These focus groups can include as little as 20 people. Australia is a country of over 25 million people. Does making decisions based on 20 people sound fair to you? Have your say. Be heard in between elections. Download the For My Say app now. That is number 4, My Say.
The Net Zero Con will leave millions of citizens dependent on state handouts.
It isn't a theory.
It's an agenda. There is no climate emergency. On air 24/7. This is today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
And welcome back to the Patrick Henningsen Show with me, Basil Valentine, sitting in for Patrick Henningsen. And as I said, I'm delighted to be joined for the first time by Andrew Eborn, who is an expert on artificial intelligence and how it's going to be used to manipulate elections. Andrew, until you emailed me earlier today with the very detailed dossier, I thought this was a made-up story, to be honest. I mean, elections, we see our politicians on screen, love them or loathe them, good, bad or indifferent, we make our way to the ballot box. We put an X against the name of the person we want, and then hopefully they count the votes fairly, and that's that. I couldn't see an avenue for AI. But since I've seen your email, well, I must admit, I sit corrected, because I realise it's all part of this increasingly, well, complex web about deciphering fiction from reality, Andrew.
Yes, you're absolutely right, Basil. And as you know, I talk around the world. I present something called Andrew Eborn's Fake or Fact. And we're living in a very diseased information age. We're drowning in a sea of misinformation and disinformation. And it's come at an extraordinary time because there are 2 billion people going to the polls this year, voting in elections around the world. And in 2017, fake news, Colin had that as the phrase of the year, fake news. And last year, the phrase of the year was AI, artificial intelligence. If you combine those, it's a delicious fusion, which gives rise to all sorts of things. They say that the camera never lies. Well, that's perhaps the biggest lie of all. And we had very recently, you might remember, the uproar they had about Kate and her photograph. Well, all she was trying to do was to make the photo look as good as possible. What we're talking about with AI is manipulated images. As I say, you work on that sort of basis. It's more like Photograph, F-A-U-X, rather than Photograph itself.
Very good.
There's a number
Very
of them.
Good.
I thank you. I'm here all week. So if you have a look at that sort of stuff, and I've sent you a few examples. I know I've been working the gallery very hard as to what's going to happen. But if you look around the world, politicians have been using their three sides to it, if you like. There are the altered images, which are photographs which have been adapted in a particular way. And that can either be used by the parties to show the party in a negative light, the politician, or a negative light, or can be used in a positive light, sometimes by their supporters. And we had in Slovenia was perhaps the very first election decided by AI, if you like, because just a few hours before the polls close, an audio recording surfaced, which showed one of the candidates apparently having a conversation about how to rig the election. And they couldn't respond because obviously it was Perda at the time. And what happened is the relevant people went to the polls assuming that this particular politician was corrupt. And as a result, they lost the election. And we're going to be seeing more and more of that with people embracing technology to basically paint this artificial picture, whether it's a positive one showing them in a particularly good light or a negative one putting them in a particularly bad light.
Yes. And on that score, we've got an image, the first one, if we can put up the first still image on the screen of Donald Trump. Now, what I will say about these AI images is that if you look closely, you can sort of tell, but can you, that isn't real? There's Donald Trump surrounded by smiling black faces. Now, it so happens that Trump is actually quite popular with black people. Although if you ask a lot of people, in certainly here in the UK, popular sort of impression given by the so-called liberal corporate media is that Trump is a racist, as simple as that. And that's actually, ingrained in a lot of people's ideas. Not actually the case, from my understanding. He actually proved very popular amongst black male voters in 2020 because he's a success and they like success. And he's an aspirational figure. But that picture is fake. 100%.
Well, that's certainly true. So what I've done, Basil, I've given you lots of examples I've sent to your production team as to where that has. The very first one was a Trump arrest. And you can see he was surrounded by police people. I don't know if we can pull that up. He was surrounded police one. And what happens? There it is. That's the arrest one. And you're right. If you look very carefully, some of the things are not quite right. So that it's normally the fingers are because of the extremities. The hair is not quite right. Some of the relevant, if you drill down into the picture, you can see those slight discrepancies. But that picture was put out, obviously, with the intention of degrading Trump and saying, look, this is what happened with his arrest. It never happened at all like that. And whilst the media around the world is bursting a blood vessel with their wall-to-wall coverage of the various trials, it didn't happen in the way depicted in that picture. So that was a negative one. The two pictures with him with the black votes is what happened. He realised, and a lot of people realised, his supporters, that in 2020, one of the key elements for Biden's victory was the black vote. So they wanted to show Trump in a positive light. And this was, again, generated by AI. You're quite right to point out that, of course, many people love Donald Trump from all sorts of different sides of America. And there's some who obviously don't. But this particular picture, he wanted to be seen with the black community, is what his supporters were doing. So they did that. And the other one, which is one where they said he pulled up his motorcade and went down with some kids in the hood. And it's working on that sort of basis, where they were looking at that sort of principle, bringing him that sort of black voters because he was down in amongst them. But all of those pictures are fake. And I always sort of turn around and say, look, what we need to do in this diseased information age is to question everything. The tools are out there where seeing is no longer believing. You have to turn around and say, well, actually, is it right? And is there supporting evidence to make that make sense?
Well, I'm reminded of the famous line from 1984, the party's final command was to not believe your own eyes. If we see an image for the first time of a politician, what are the telltale signs that this could be faked? Or, I mean, it might not even be a politician. It could also be, the result of the apparent result or what appears to be the result of their policies. Now, one of the turning points in British history was undoubtedly the winter of 1978 to 79, the so-called winter of discontent. I don't know if you'll remember, if you're old enough to remember it, Andrew, when, amongst other things, the bin men went on strike. And so we had piles of rubbish on the streets of Britain. They weren't actually as high as was claimed at the time, even in pre-AI days. But nevertheless, it created a very bad impression for Jim Callaghan, the Prime Minister, who went on to lose the election the following May to Margaret Thatcher, and the rest, as they say, is history. So just as you can put a politician in a positive or unfavourable light, so you can do the same with sort of the results of their policies or lack of them. For example, I've seen footage on social media of the streets of Philadelphia, almost literally littered with human beings in various states of undress and zombification, living on the street, camping on the street. They appear, most of them, to be victims of fentanyl. I mean, it really is a sort of post-apocalyptic scene of urban decay and degradation. Now, there's nothing to stop somebody claiming that that is also in New York, using AI to basically say that more of America is infected with this malaise of mass homelessness and drug addiction than is really the case. Do you see what I mean? You can.
Oh, no, it's totally bypassed. And a lot of people are working backwards from the story they want to depict. And there's sufficient information now. And people basically, it's what's happened, why I call it a diseased information age, is what people do. They surround themselves with people who share their prejudices. They read newspapers that confirm those prejudices. They only look at channels that don't question everything. And it used to be said that basically if you didn't read the newspaper, you're ill-informed, and if you read it, you're misinformed. Well, never has that been truer than in the current state of the world. And we have wars around the world, and as you know, the first casualty in war is the truth. And within a matter of hours of the various invasions and so on and so forth, war breaking out, there were zillions, literally millions of photographs and artificially created depicting particular scenes, some of which came from movies, some of which were captioned because they referred to different wars and so on and so forth. And whilst there were horrendous real images, a lot of the images out there were fake. And what I did throughout the media is take a look at some of those photos, drill down, look at where we can do it. And there are a number of tools within our armory which can help that. Some of which are these what were called reverse image searches. You can have a look at that. You can drag a picture just as you would put a text into Google. You can drag a picture into Google search and it will tell you where a particular image originated. And it's very helpful when looking at that sort of side. You also want to get confirmation from peers. Have a look at reliable sources. Watch all the time at TNT because we're drilled down into that sort of information. And all of those are really, really powerful tools that we have to question everything. But it is so easy, as I say, just to have your prejudices confirmed. And that's the real problem. Get those independent sources, get different voices so that you can question the narrative and make sure we're not being misled.
Who do you think, Andrew, is sort of ultimately behind this? I mean, we all know that political apparatchiks and fixers have been messing around with elections. And of course, these days we have this whole requirement to control and direct the narrative. It's a relatively new term in political analysis. We used to just deal in terms of, truth, fiction, news, policies, issues and policies. But now it's all about narrative. It's all about controlling the flow of information and the direction of thought so that the chattering classes are herded in a particular way. Things like those fake pictures of Trump we saw, both good and bad. We've just seen from GCHQ this morning, the chief there saying that they think the Russians are behind various blackmail scams and that the Chinese are also working to undermine our democracy. Do you think that there are third parties, foreign agents involved in some of this, or is it entirely homegrown? In other words, Republicans will fake bad pictures of Biden, and likewise Democrats are going to scare up and vice versa and so on and so forth.
Well, the honest answer is this, is that all of the above, because it's a tool in the armory of the propaganda war that we're doing. And it's the Sultans of Spin. Now, if you remember the last election in the UK when Boris Johnson won, that it was done on sort of one policy, get Brexit done was the thing. And his mastermind of all of that was the wonderful Dominic Cummings, who is a brilliant media manipulator. He knows how to get to the heart and soul of the electorate. And Boris, you recall, not so long ago, he won by a massive 80-seat majority. And he became the politician. I called him the Carlsberg politician. He could reach part of the electorate that other politicians couldn't reach. And he basically appealed to everybody because the Sultan of Spin would give him that particular narrative. He's now turned into this Marmite character because of various other issues. But it's looking at that sort of side, it's turning around and saying, okay, how can we manipulate the people's thinking? And AI is one of the tools with which that's done. And we've seen some images. I mean, there's also a number of things where they do with voices. So, for example, I'll give you an example. In New York, the mayor there has been doing these robo calls, and he's been using different voices basically to make him appear as though he can speak in different languages. So he would make these calls to some people, and they would basically be able to think that he can speak Cantonese, and he can speak Russian, and he can speak Italian and French and whatever community it is. And the reality is he can't, but there's a special tool, which AI, which helps that happen. And I've sent a few examples to your brilliant production team. I don't know if we can play, maybe start with the English version, and then I can show you some of the foreign language ones.
We may be able to, and we will find out. But first, we're going to take a short break for the headlines. Absolutely fascinating conversation with Andrew Eborn, and we'll be right back after this short news break.
Great news!
The news.
We have news.
Great news!
Great news! Great news!
Great news, my friends.
Yeah. Listen.
TNT Radio News.
For TNT, this is James O'Neill. The first U.S.-made F-16 fighter jets are set to arrive in Ukraine within the next month, as announced by Danish Prime Minister Mette Frederiksen during a press conference in Stockholm with other Nordic leaders and German Chancellor Olaf Scholz. South Dakota Governor Kristi Noem claimed in her book, No Going Back, that she canceled the scheduled meeting with French President Emmanuel Macron due to his alleged anti-Israel comments. However, Macron's office has clarified that Governor Noem was never invited to meet with him.
Why not give TNT Radio a follow? We're on all major social platforms, including Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Gab, and Getter. Help us get the word out as we cover the biggest topics of our time right here on today's News Talk.
TNT Radio.
TNT Radio.
And welcome back to the Patrick Henningsen Show with me, Basil Valentine, sitting in for Patrick. Delighted to be joined by Andrew Eborn, talking about how AI is manipulating elections. And that brings up Joe Biden. Now, he's quite capable of making a fool of himself without any artificial intelligence. But this particular clip, which was shared by Kim.com on the X platform, if we can play that now, I'll get Andrew to talk about it. Let's roll clip one, please, studio. Right. Now, I believe that's Biden apparently being unable to recognize Rishi Sunak, the Prime Minister of Great Britain. But that didn't actually happen.
Well, so what happened there? This is Biden arriving in Dublin. And it seems as though, just to depict Biden as a complete nincompoop, that he wouldn't recognize the Prime Minister of the United Kingdom. So he seems to, because the clip has been edited in a particular way, he seems to be pushing past him and shaking hands with the other person in uniform. In fact, if we've got the original clip, you'll see from that.
Do we have that?
Are we able to play the original clip?
No, we haven't got the original clip. No.
Well, in the original clip, and search it out, it's on a number of news reports, he does, in fact, greet Rishi Sunak straight away. He can see that sort of stuff. But what's happened is there's that edit from the time. I don't know. Are we able to play the clip again? I can talk you through it and show you where the edit is. Okay, we have a look. We play the clip again. So you'll see Biden coming off the plane. So there he is. That all happened. It looks as though he's pushed Rishi Sunak aside and basically just gone to the uniform person. Rishi Sunak was greeted by Biden and had a little bit of a conversation before he went to the thing. But the whole idea there is to give the impression that Biden didn't know who Sunak was, and to give the impression as a result that Biden was a lesser man. So it's a very easy tool to work on that sort of basis. And I was talking a little bit earlier about the robocalls and what was happening there. And it was used by Eric Adams, the New York mayor, to basically fool the people into thinking he can speak all these different languages. So do check that out. It was all done again by AI. And he's turned around from a positive point of view. He says, well, actually, of course I'm going to use AI because it's a communication means. Yes. And it means that I can touch part of the electorate on that sort of basis.
Yes, quite understandable. But Am I right in saying, because it's not my specialist area, to be honest, Andrew, if you take a sample of my voice, let's say somebody records me talking on TNT here for 10 minutes, then they can use AI to basically get me saying anything, that you can take the voice print and basically recreate it so that we could have Basil Valentine saying, you know, jiggery pokery, whatever you like. You know, you can just make things. You can literally put words in people's mouths.
Absolutely. And that's exactly the phrase. So you'll remember last year there was the Hollywood actors strike. And one of the central issues in that was to do with artificial intelligence, because artificial intelligence, I always say it's our greatest human achievement, but potentially our biggest existential threat. And Goldman Sachs have estimated about 300 million jobs will be lost to AI. But the fact is, on the positive side of it, lots of jobs will be replaced as a result of that, and there will be opportunities. So if you see AI as a co-pilot in this sort of situation, it's very, very powerful. But dealing specifically with the voices, absolutely, we can sample your voices and we can basically get all sorts of new speeches done as a result of it. And this was the concern with the actors' strike. They were saying, well, we can record an artist, just do half a day with them in different poses and so on and so forth, and then we'll be able to make up movies anytime, any sort of variation, without ever having to pay the actors again. And a good example of this, a positive side was Bruce Willis, who suffers with aphasia, which means that he can no longer act. But what happened with him is he was commissioned by a Russian telecom company to basically promote their product. And they did an AI version of Bruce Willis. They paid him for it. And as a result of it, he made lots of money, even though he didn't go to the studio himself. And so what we need to look at is the commercial reality. And I talk around the world as Back to the Futurist, because I specialize in that side, very looking good at the future. I thank you. We love a good pun. The pun is mightier than the sword, is what we say. So we look at that sort of side, and we basically say, look, well, what is the technology? How can it be used for good? And the Bruce Willis example is exactly that. So if you have a look at that stuff, we had the Eurovision Song Contest. It caused all sorts of controversy, but it shot a spotlight on ABBA, who 50 years ago won with Waterloo. And they showed, just up the road from where I am in Regent's Park, not too far away, they showed what's called the Abbatar, the ABBAverse, if you like, where they've done these creations, these holograms of ABBA.
That's right.
And it looks and feels like the real thing. And we're going to see much more of that with entertainment, where you're using AI, you're using this great technology, but also artists can embrace it to make sure that they can earn money in their sleep and continue to inspire future generations, even though they can sit at home having their cocoa.
Now, this ability to bring actors back from the dead, quite literally, is extraordinary. I know the Star Wars franchise wanted to revive the late Peter Cushing as the Grand Mufti. They decided in the end not to go through with it. I personally think that's a bit of a shame as a Peter Cushing fan. But the possibilities are just literally infinite. I mean, only limited by our imagination. I find it sort of inspiring and scary at the same time, to be perfectly honest. I wonder if some code of ethics is going to be required, legislation, or how on earth this can be kept for, beneficial and creative purposes rather than criminal purposes, or for reasons to defame and, otherwise destroy people's reputations. That's what I'm concerned about, Andrew.
No, and you're absolutely right to be concerned. It is terrifying what is possible. And you have a look at those sort of things. So if you give the example of being able to simulate somebody's voice, and you have these calls, and there have been lots of examples where people have lost significant amounts of money because they think there's a relative. So rather than, there used to be the old scam that people get a relative phoning them, or actually sending a text saying, I'm using a different phone because mine's been stolen. Can you send me money? I'm in desperate need. Well, that was bad enough, and that fooled a lot of people. Nowadays, you can have phone calls from somebody who sounds exactly like the person you think it is. And they can tell you, look, this is where they are. They will have information about you, so they can weave that total story. And it's incredibly powerful. Millions upon millions are lost as a result of these frauds. And that's why it's so important, is to understand what the technology can do so that we're prepared for the risks. And just putting people's head in the sand, ostrich-like, if you like, is not good enough. It's incredibly dangerous. And we had last year at Bletchley Park in November, we had the very first, the world's very first AI safety summit, held at the home of the Enigma Code. Lots of the great and good from the industry, including Elon Musk, flew in to talk about AI, talk about the capabilities, but also to say, actually, we do need safety mechanisms. You've got certain things you shouldn't automate. You shouldn't automate weapons, for example, because there needs to be some sort of stop, if you like, so people don't misunderstand what's happening.
Yes, absolutely. The sort of the RoboCop nightmare, really, isn't it? You know, you've been selected by AI for extermination.
Yes.
And that's the end of that, you know. Take a very short break. We're going to take a very short break now. When we come back, we've got Taylor Swift. She's got a role in all this, unsurprisingly. And I also want to get Andrew's perspective on the potential for a November general election here in the UK and what the outcome might be. We'll be right back after this short break.
Our beautiful world is changing, withering, dying by the hands of those who don't value nature, even though we all depend on it for life itself. But there is hope. Together with caring friends, the Nature Conservancy can restore our lands, heal our waters, and save our wildlife with big solutions only nature can provide. But every day we lose more of the places we love, and we urgently need to save endangered lands, waters, and wild species. The actions we take today will determine the tomorrow we leave to our children and grandchildren. The water they drink, the air they breathe, the beauty they experience. To learn more about how you can help protect and conserve our beautiful world, visit nature.org today.
We come from a long line of farmers, and there's a sense of pride, but there's also a significant amount of pressure.
Farmers have to take care of their physical and their mental health, because what's a farm without a farmer?
Watching the sun come up, that's my time. I can have a cup of coffee and every day is a new opportunity.
That's cool.
Your hands got so cool.
Yay!
Don't forget to check in on yourself. Love your mind.
Political commentator and investigative journalist. You're with Patrick Henningsen on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
And welcome back to the Patrick Henningsen Show with me, Basil Valentine, in for Patrick just for tonight. I'm delighted to say I'm joined by Andrew Eborn, and we're discussing all things AI, and in particular, how they relate to the numerous elections around the world this year. The world's biggest democracy, India, over a billion people going to the polls. It takes them a month to cast all the votes. Of course, there's the presidential election in the United States. There'll be a general election here in the UK, and also the European Union Parliament elections. But that's basically a talking shop without any power whatsoever. Who does have power these days? Well, a lot of it's with the so-called influencers, a whole new class of people, influencers. One woman got into big trouble in recent days for suggesting that people should eat cake. Do you remember that famous Marie Antoinette quote was recycled at the Met Gala? So it looks like her career is taking a nosedive. But someone who seems ever in the ascendant is Taylor Swift. Tell us about Taylor Swift.
Well, I'm sure you listen to her album every single day, the new one, the Tortured Poets Department, which did 200 million, just show you the power of it, 200 million streams in the first 24 hours. It's a phenomenal success. Wow. Spotify's biggest thing. So a really powerful influencer. And if you can get the minds of people following those influencers on a political point of view, then that's right. So what happened at the Grammys? She obviously turned up in her glorious gown, and a video was released, which I think we can see now. Have a look at this. So you can see what happened. Wow. She's holding up, apparently, according to that video, she's holding up a huge banner saying Trump won, the Democrats cheated. And you look at that sort of side, and the reality was that didn't happen at all. But it just shows how convincing it can be. That was created by AI, where that was superimposed, that particular banner. And Taylor Swift has traditionally not been involved at all in politics. She got involved on one particular occasion when she talked out against Marsha Blackburn, you may remember, and she called Marsha a Trump in a wig because she was basically sort of saying that she disagreed with a lot of her policies. So if anything, she would be on the other side, but it certainly didn't happen on that basis. You also mentioned, interestingly, the Met Gala. Well, at the Met Gala, a number of celebrities this year, they couldn't make it, but what they did, they released AI images of themselves in Met Gala outfits, appropriately things for the carpet. Have a look, there's lots of those out there. So Katy Perry, for example, and she managed to fool her own mother into thinking that she'd actually attended the Met Gala with one of these fake images. And that's what's going to happen. More and more of these things are out there. As I always say, that it is too good to be true, then it probably is. So do question everything.
Artificial intelligence, well, it's probably got a lot more IQ points than our politicians, certainly on this side of the pond. You know, whether artificial or real, slightly greater brain power would be welcome in the corridors of power, because we do seem to be governed at the moment by a particularly venal and stupid ruling class, Andrew. Behind the scenes, of course, that's where you get the big brains manipulating public opinion. And you referenced Boris Johnson, his unique ability to, as you say, you know, that was an old advertising slogan, Heineken refreshes the parts other beers can't reach. We're going back a little bit there. But this year, Rishi Sunak, Keir Starmer, two uniquely unpopular leaders for the main parties. Sunak is underwater by 80-20. 80% of the electorate disapprove of the job he's doing, only 20% approve. And Starmer, not much better. He's something like 70-30. He's about minus 40. 70% disapproving of his job, 30% approving. I think those guys are going to need some AI intervention in order to, you know, try and massage their way into power by effectively hoodwinking the British public. Any ideas about what we can do to prevent ourselves having the wool pulled over our eyes?
Well, I think you make some brilliant points in there. And we're living actually in quite a sad times politically, because people are looking at negative reasons for why they don't vote for a particular party rather than positive reasons for voting for somebody. And if you look at the turnout in the recent local council elections and even for the mayors, they were basically pitiful. And actually, it was apathy which was the biggest winner. Some votes are like 32% turnout. So some I was seeing some councils even just as low as 22%. What's going to happen is AI is really powerful for finding solutions. It can basically process information at speeds which we could never have dreamt about previously. And I'll give you an example. We've got problems with the NHS over here. And they did a research in about waiting lists and so on and so forth. And there was a research in the University of California, San Diego. And they basically worked out that chatting to ChatGPT, if you had a problem from a medical point of view, was better than chatting to your GP. And the reason for that, it was more empathetic, it had better language, it had more time to actually provide you with better answers. So that's what we need to do, is each of the problems which affects all of the politicians, they could embrace AI as a co-pilot, if you like, to help find those solutions. So I think there is a power for good. So in addition to all the fake images and fake videos and fake recordings, and I predict there will be several more of those, which is why I unpack those on a regular basis in Andrew Yvonne's Fake or Fact, there are some good things to do. We're discovering seismic changes in medicine as a result of using AI. It's processing information. We're basically making the paralyzed able to walk again. There's been great stories about that sort of side. There's been tremendous advances in cancer research and so on and so forth about prevention, again using AI. And I work with an organization called Science with Soul, which has been looking at basically sharing that information, if you like, how AI can basically disseminate all the data and point out little patterns of behavior, because prevention is better than cure. And if you look at that sort of science, well, hang about, if we can predict early on, early signs of things like Parkinson's and so on and so forth, the sooner we can predict that, then we can basically try and deal with that in a positive way. So I think that should be the message, rather than the negative message that we've had. Let's talk about the great achievements that we can do. And they had a great example. They were talking about Wegovy and Ozempic. You might remember, it's all in the pages today, about how you can lose weight as a result of this miracle injection. And they say that basically that one drug and one company was responsible for making, I think it was Norway, basically balance their GDP. They were in a profit as a result of tremendous success with that drug. And what Rishi Sunak was saying in his speech was, we should be embracing the technology. We should be crowing from the rooftops about our capabilities in artificial intelligence and in science and in creative arts. And that's what we should be doing, punching way above our weight in those areas. And I think looking at a positive message rather than a negative message is the way forward.
Sunak said we can expect to see more change in the next 5 years than over the previous 30. But I'm always very dubious of politicians when they talk about change without giving us some clarity about how that intersects with their own vision of a better society. That's the thing. I mean, the word we can have change for good, we can have change for the worse. And I would venture to suggest that a lot of things that have happened in Britain in the last 50 years have changed for the worse. You know, people are always very quick to decry the past. They talk about the 1970s as if it was the worst time in human history. But you could buy a house with a mortgage based on 3 times the annual salary of the average working person. You can forget about anything like that these days. So, you know, for all, you know, we had industrial disputes back then, and, you know, supposedly we've advanced. Nevertheless, I want to see more specific, concrete suggestions about how change is going to be positive, allied to the ethics, and with a vision from politicians about exactly what a better society is going to look like, rather than just talking in these vague terms about we're going to see all this change. Absolutely. Because people find that scary.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And I've given you several concrete examples which those politicians could cite in virtually any area of industry. And you think, well, 30 years is a long time scale. Mobile phones, for example, the internet within that period, Facebook, social media, none of those existed 30 years ago. And so what we have, and actually AI did exist. Artificial intelligence actually was in the 1950s. It's just a phrase which has been used to cover anything now, which can be done by a computer, basically replacing what a human would otherwise be able to do. And I think there are very specific, you look at any industry, any business will be benefiting as a result of artificial intelligence. We're going to be getting lots of those auto processes, which have taken lots and lots of time, are going to become automated. You're going to see tremendous advances in things like, you know, customer service, in terms of delivery, in terms of dealing with data and so on and so forth. Every single industry, whatever industry you might pick, will have a huge advantage as a result of it. And I think you're right, is the way to persuade people is to say, okay, let's drill down. One of these general promises, let's have a look at each individual industry and say, this is the benefit you're going to get as a result of it. And I've given several examples today as to how that can happen. And there are several more. The more we can do on an industry by industry basis, drilling down into that, That's the way you persuade people. And I think what politicians are making the mistake of doing, they think that the electorate are stupid. They're just going to blindly swallow all of this sort of jargon, all these little sound bites. They're not. The electorate are much more intelligent than that. They're now questioning everything, which I would encourage them to do. So absolutely demand specifics, work out what the policy is, and most important, how that's going to be funded. But it's very easy making all these promises. But unless you turn around and say, this is the cost element of it, you're going to have difficulties.
It looks like we might have had a bit of a false start with electric vehicles, which, you know, even 18 months, 2 years ago, seemed like a panacea, incredibly fast and, you know, supposedly green and the future, basically. But they're piling up on secondhand dealers' lots. People don't want them. They catch fire. They take a long time to charge. They're still not really as convenient as internal combustion engines. How is AI going to break people's misperceptions about technology? Or is this possibly going to be another false dawn like that? You know, we all know that technology gets obsolete very, very quickly. That's my point.
Well, I think the thing is to look at that particular side. When they were inventing these electric cars, you have to work out, well, they need to be powered. And as a result, that's the problem that we have. There isn't sufficient power to do that. So you can only go a certain number of miles. What I would suggest in that area, and it will come about in the automotive side, is what is called dynamic charging. So when you're going along, you're actually charging the car as well. Yes. So you get the appropriate sort of point. So they can look at that sort of side. So no, I think I wrote the Book of Failure, Andrew Eborn's Book of Failure. We've got a copy here, where we look at lots of great technology in history and the reason that it failed. And I always say that if a necessity is the mother of invention, well, failure is the father of success. And no more so in the general realm of technology, where you have to have all those failures so you can look back and say, well, what did we do wrong there, and learn from those mistakes. So I think it is right. We need to keep doing. I think it's a very bright future, but we need to make sure that people understand what technology can do, harness those opportunities, and respond accordingly.
It does seem that the last, you know, 6 to 12 months has seen something of a quantum leap, that we've reached a sort of tipping point with technology where, you know, the roller coaster is speeding up, for want of a better expression, that, you know, AI gives the potential for, what's the word I'm looking for? Not often that I'm lost for words, really, Andrew, I can tell you.
Well, that's all right. Tap it into ChatGPT, it'll come up with several words for you. So it'd work on that sort of basis. No, you're right. AI and technology must be used as a co-pilot. It is a tool to assist us. The starting point has to be understanding what the capabilities are of that technology, because by understanding that's how we can embrace
absolutely.
It.
What I was trying to say is that computing power has, you know, accelerated far quicker than it did in the years from the mid-1990s, let's say, up until 5 years ago, that we're now doubling computer power much, much quicker than ever before. Hence the ability of AI to come up with the kind of solutions that you're talking about.
No, that's right. And that's why stocks such as NVIDIA and things like that are going through the roof, where you've got computer chips and so on and so forth. So when people stop and think about it and say, well, okay, what do we need in this new digital economy, if you like, to make the whole system work? And as I say before, is that data is the new currency, and people should be incredibly careful what data they give away, because the more that AI and other sources can utilize that data and build a picture of you, the more it's possible to deceive you, and the more it's possible to manipulate your thinking and also expose you to potential frauds and so on and so forth. So be incredibly careful when you're signing up and giving any information away, and be careful what you post. I always say to everybody, history repeats itself, because we don't learn the lessons from history. And one of the things that people do, they post all the things, and 20 years ago, somebody wrote this. Well, I can tell you, everything you've ever written, everything you've ever said, everything you've ever seen, every picture you've ever taken, will end up in the hands of those you least want it to. Be prepared for that as well.
Yeah, very good point. Andrew, where can people find you, other than here on TNT, of course?
More platforms than Paddington. I love being on TNT. It's a fantastic home with some brilliant thinking people, which is what I like. You can find me everywhere. It's at Andrew Eborn, at Octopus TV on Twitter. You can go to my website, octopus.tv. Lots of information there. I speak around the world. I'll be coming to a city near you very soon, I hope.
Thank you, Andrew Eborn, for that absolutely fascinating expose of AI and its relationship to elections and indeed every aspect of our reality going forward. Look forward to speaking to you again very soon, Andrew Eborn.
Looking forward to it.
Thank you. Well, we're going to take a break for the headlines now. When we come back, cryptocurrency and the possibility of a wider Middle East war with investigative journalist and TNT contributor Blake Lovewell. After these headlines, don't go away.